regular fare, and I went with her. And that was in the Diamond Jubilee year, 97, see. And I come back, and the next excitement struck me was at Klondike, in 98, when I went up there. So I think that's enough for you.
Well, now, you told us all about your packing up in Alaska, but you didn't tell us much about your own work on the claim. Could you tell us a little about that?
Well, I didn't do so awful much. I did some prospecting, of course. We
you had some partners?
Yeah, well, they were partners in as far as living together and working together, but we wasn't partners otherwise. You know, you stake your claim and they stake theirs, see. If they didn't like the looks of the land, well, they'd say, well, I'll wait, because you could only stake so many, you know. Mm-hmm. I'll wait till I see a more promising prospect, you see. And we was up the Stewart River. It came in the tributary of the Yukon, about 70 miles from Dawson. Mm-hmm. And we was up there and got acquainted with lots of fellas that was like ourselves, that didn't know much. Well, I knew just the difference between noon and night, that's all. But, you know, as far as mining was concerned, we was, Chechaukas. Mm-hmm. Real greenhorns. Mm-hmm. That's what Chechauka meant. Mm-hmm. And, putting their knowledge and errors and what you learned as you went along, and you learned how to pan a dirt, gravel or whatever, you know, pan of pans, and see, you could so fine, you could trust your own panning to tell you whether you'd got anything or whether you hadn't. Mm-hmm. And it's really exciting when you take a shovel full of dirt and put it in a pan and then put some water with it and stir it up and keep shuffling it around and till you spill it all out except just the very last. Mm-hmm. And then to see that thin streak of gold. You know, it didn't amount to much, perhaps 5 cents, 10 cents, or even 15, or sometimes a dollar. Mm-hmm. But it was very work up enthusiasm, because the shovel of dirt, you couldn't see where you took it from, but you could take another one from where it came from, and you got another result. Well, then you looked at nobody got a stake on Noah's. Because if you staked a claim, well, you just simply measured off. Let's see now. Well, it was the same in Canada as it was in the United States. Of course, that Yukon was in Canada. And the United States, I was more acquainted with that afterwards, and your claim was ending up to 20 acres. You could... if you followed up the creek, you could go 1,320 feet one way and 660 feet the other way. And, or was it yards?
Well, you wouldn't think so, would you?
No, I think it must be, it was figured out 20 acres. Mm-hmm. See? Mm-hmm. And that's all you was allowed. You couldn't stake no more on that creek anyway. All you could do was buy in, or but you couldn't stake one another one. So you had to go down to the police post there. The Northwest Mounted Police was still there, and.
Where were they situated at? Did it have a name, the place?
Well, this was stopped at the mouth of the Stewart River, mm-hmm. And the police post was on another little island, right at the mouth of the Stewart. Well, no, those on the mainland. That is the police post. Mainland, as far as we knew. But when it was anywhere as high, we stopped on a little, would be an island, you see. And we put up our tent after we'd been up the Stewart River and straight on Ogilvy Creek, that was named after that Ogilvy Mills or. It used to be Ogilvy Mills, flour mills in the Rainy Lake District of Canada, and I want to mention right now that their flower that they put up was just about as much difference between their flower and the flower that we got acquainted with on the inside the Yukon, Dawson, when we had to buy some, as there was between, well, there was no comparison. You see, I used to stir up the flour and make up a bunch of biscuits or flapjacks or whatever we was going to have, and I'd put so many cups of flour and so many cups of water. Well, the first flour we got, I was running short and I had a chance to buy a sack of flour. I bought a sack of flour and I started to do the same thing. And all I'd got after I'd mixed it up was some milk. You know, it just, the flour disappeared, and I had to keep on putting in. I put in at the least four or five times as much flour as I would have ogivis flour. To get the same amount of dough. And so you just see, that sack of flour, why, relying on my own experience, it was simply a fake flour, that's all, you know.
But Ogilvy's was very...
But Ogilvy's was from the Rainy Lake District, Mills or St. Greer. Why, their flour was, when you squeeze it out of your handful, and you let that handful is still lay there in your hand, you see, you'd squeeze, but the other one, but I found that out afterwards, you squeeze that, and it would just fall flat on your hand like a pancake in your hand, you know. There was no comparison or whatever. So, little things like that, a man's life might depend on it. Because when I went into the Yukon, why, you had to take enough food to last you a year, or you didn't go. There would be a Northwest Mounted Policeman there at the line. Of course, the line between Canada and the United States takes along the top of the range of mountains that coast, you see, and from the range, from the top of the range to the seawater was United States territory, but from the other way, well, it was Canadian, and we didn't know all this, but the merchants did in Vancouver, where we
outfitted.
They knew that you had to have your bill of goods. They tell you what you, well, lots of things they'd remind you that you need, and but you can take what you like, hardware, or whatever you fancied, but in food you'd got to have enough to last you the 12 months, and you figure it up when it comes to you, I think three pound of grub a day. Well, you take 30 days in a month and there's 100 pound of grub gone. Well, you would have flour and beans and bacon and all of it went in his grub, groceries, you see, sugar and bacon and what have you, to make up the amount. And they told us that you had to have your stuff, and they'd make you out your bill for it in triplicate. Three bills. Now, this is, that bill's for you, yourself. You know what you've got and what you've paid for and all that. And this one, you'll give to the customs officer in wherever you land. We went to Skagway. That was where the most, it's head of the Yukon River, you see. And we went to there, and we had to leave one of them bills of lading with the customs. And they'd look it over, check it off, yes, that's right. But they'd keep your bill. And then the next time, on top of the hill, it was about 18 miles out from, a little more than that, it was 6 or 8 miles out from Skagway to the mouth of the creek. I wouldn't know which, what the just name of the creek is, was, you know. And we got our stuff all delivered out there with a man with the wagons, a four-horse wagon, and he'd take our stuff out there, I think, for a cent. And it's all good once, you see. And he left to put it there. Well, we had, there was three, four, there was four in our gang by this time. You see, I'd butted in with three other boys, and that made four. Well, we had to have at least 2 ton of grub, and then there was hardware and stove, and well, that kept really coming hardware, wouldn't it? Stove and tent and bedding and well, your personal effects, and and he dumped the teamster dumped them all in one place where it was nice. We thought it was all right. It was chop a few little trees and lay them down, and put the stuff on them, and from there. It was about 6 miles to the top of the hill, and you carried it. Well, it don't look so much, carrying 6 ton of stuff, or what have you, but you've got 3 ton of grub, no, 2 ton of grub at the least, and with all the other stuff, personal effects, and so it made it considerable more. But what we did is, we pitched our first tent right there, right where the stuff was. But we wasn't the only ones. They was lined up there for a mile or more. People with their bunch of grub and their outfit. Well, you started from there packing. Well, I had never done no packing, and neither had the other guys. So we was all, you were all equal. But you know, we put 50-pound sacks of flour on your back, have a pack strap, of course. Some like one and some like another kind of a pack strap, but if you're stuck, an old pair of overalls does just about as good as anything. You can put everything you want into the seat of them and have the legs come over your shoulders for a strap, you see, and try to get them together somewhere in time. But you can carry just as good a pack strap as you can buy, and but there's all kinds you could buy. Harness galore, you know, enough to make dog team harness for a good sized team. But the old overalls was just handy, and some would want their pack come on here, and they call that a tump line.
When
a tump line, their pack was, they'd catch it across their forehead, you see, and that would leave their shoulders free, and some would want it over their shoulders and then tied around their waist and all this sort of thing. Well, the less you add to pack, the less you add to bring back. And so we camped, as I say, right where the teamster left the stuff. And we carried it about a mile. Well, that mile was a long, long mile, especially the latter end of it. You know, you'd get, but it was best to go and then instead of trying to put too heavy a pack on and then have to stop and rest before you got to where he was. Well, you'd pack your grub to all up there, say, a mile. Well, you could make 10 trips a day. If you wanted to, or if you could want, if you've got strength, you could make it more. But it didn't give advantage you none in the end, because after you got your stuff all up there, but in the meantime, you've got to get it up there to the summit. And then the mounted police would, or you'd go to them, they didn't come to you. You'd go to them and say you've got your outfit there, and you'd give them that other bill of lading. And they'd come and look it over and check it with what they'd got. And not only that, but they had a long steel needle, about a couple of foot long. And you'd say there was a sack of beans. And they'd stick that needle in there and it would go out the other end. And then they'd turn it onto a sack of something else. But, you know, they'd stick that needle. Because someone had been caught smuggling liquor in the middle of this, in a sack of grub, you see. So you couldn't beat them no ways. But when they give you their okay, well, then you could start down the hill with your stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, instead of packing it, there was snow. Well, you could put down your sledge. You'd got sleds that you brought with you and hand sled. And I want to tell you that we'd have a hand sled 8 foot long. Maybe, eight, 10 foot long, just to suit your fancy. And but they'd put a, there was a ring on the runner and also on the top of the deck where the stuff would go. And you put a stick through that, this ring, and it's catching that one on the runner. And you'd have that in one hand and your pull rope over the other shoulder, you see. And you'd lean into your, put on your sled, and after you got it started, why, you put on 200 or 300 pounds of stuff for a trot load, and you'd pull in there. But you'd have a lot of little dips and hollows and little hill ridges, you know, to pull over, and you'd be surprised what that jeepo could do.
That was kind of a hand brake, huh?
That, well, it was a hand lift, you see. If you was going down the hill, you had to lift the nose up while you pull and lean into it, and the darn sled would come up there with that three or four sacks of stuff on it. And so to putting it down the hill wasn't so bad, instead of stopping every mile or two. Why? But as I say, we put this, packing it, we carried it about a mile. Mm-hmm. Well, after we got it all carried up there, then we'd break our tent, take that down, and then we'd take the tent about a mile beyond something, you know, it may not be exactly a mile, but it was, mm-hmm. But what we thought would be a nice, not only us, but all the rest of the people, they thought it was a good, long enough to pack. Mm-hmm. See, because you better pack a few more pounds and go half a mile than to take a few less pounds and go a mile, because you're going to be just as tired in the end. And you'd be surprised at the young men that died on that trip, and it was all the same disease. There was nothing the matter with them. It was spinal meningitis. You know, it's, I don't know what this spinal meningitis is, but it certainly took a toll of a good young fellas.
It wasn't pneumonia.
No, it was just they got this spinal meningitis.
Is this the same man down here?
Yes, down here at that,
Port Oregon.
Well,
that's what Richard was supposed to have.
Well, I don't know what we got, but we didn't, as it happened. None of us got sick, only we got snow blind. Mm-hmm. And if you ever suffered, you know, or mm-hmm. or thought you were suffering, it was snow blind would do it. Mm-hmm. You see, going down this, after we got the stuff up the summit, by going down on the other side, we put it, as I say, on a sled, and perhaps you'd go down there 4 or 5 miles before you'd stop and go back and get some more till you got down there and do the same thing, only you'd make it longer trips. And then you'd come to trees, they're fir trees, but there'd be open spaces in them. Well, whilst you was in the fir trees, you was all right, but in them open spaces, and the sun is shining on it, why, it might as well hit you right in the eye, you know, with a, mm-hmm. If you was looking at the sun. And your eyes would start to run, and, well, you couldn't see, and you couldn't do anything, and, well, you find this, you do this. Some of them had got a little stick, whittle a stick out, and cut a slit in it, you see, so that you would be able to, and all they could see was just this slit, but then you could see, that's enough, you could see, and but to protect your eyes. But one of our boys, he got it bad, and he was a German, one of the three. We had a German, an Hungarian, and an American boy. And the boy was a little younger than me, if anything, or, well, there wasn't a lot of difference between Vin and I. And
did you say he was the German, Vin?
No, the German was Frank. Oh. And the Hungarian was Now, what was the devil's that drunk, that boy's name? He was a labor man. Mm-hmm. They all had been working for the same outfit in New York, Singer Sewing Machine Company. And the Hungarian, he was a mechanic. Mm-hmm. He must have been pretty good. But the German, he was a janitor. And Lynn, well, he hadn't worked, Vinny hadn't worked long enough to, I guess, to have a trade, you know. Mm-hmm. But he was raised in New York State, and my old boy, he was a death on ending if he'd got the gun in his hand. Mm-hmm. A shotgun, I mean. Mm-hmm. It seemed like he couldn't miss it. Mm-hmm. And the patience, well, we was up there before we... No, we was down to Lake Bennett. It's about 30 miles, I guess, from the summit to Lake Bennett, that head of the Lake Bennett. But there was another trail that, if you remember reading the papers, well, you of course wouldn't, but no, and I guess Lynn couldn't, but the Chilkoot Pass. But you heard of the Chilkoot Pass. Well, that was a toss-up when you come up the Portland Canal. Well, Skagway was on one side of it, but across the road, across the other side of that was Dyea. And there was a trail went from there right up the mountain. And people were so thick on it that this man got his foot in a footstep that was cut in the trail in the side of the, well, this was frozen stuff too, I guess. And there was another man ready to put his foot in there just as soon as the other one took his foot out. Mm-hmm. See, they was that thick going up there. You've seen pictures of, well, you may not, but I have seen pictures of them. It looked like a little row of sticks, mm-hmm. fence posts, mm-hmm. but it was a man or a woman with her load on her shoulders and the rest.
Were there many women?
Oh, was there? Yeah, don't worry, there was lots of women went into the Klondike.
Wives or otherwise?
Well, wives. Wives. You know, I mean, yes, wives. But, and some were, but the others... sporting girls, and that they come afterwards, you know. There's no use them going in there if they hadn't got no grub, because they couldn't get by. Mm-hmm. And there was no use talking. You couldn't beat them mounties, you know. No, you couldn't. But the thing was that we got our stuff over the pass and down to Lake Bennett, and then we thought we ought to go. That is, Vin and I. They didn't want to go, but we wanted to go back and see if we hadn't got some mail come, because we'd told somebody to address us at Skagway, you see. Mm-hmm. So we went back and walked. And in the difference in that time, well, the pack trains had come in, you know, they'd shipped in burros and horses and mules and that to pack stuff. Well, they get bogged down and they take the pack off of them and leave them because they couldn't get them out. Mm-hmm. You know, when the frost began to go out of that ground and there's swampy stuff.
You mean the animals died there?
Sure, they just died there. They couldn't... and did that smell? So we walked, of course, after we got through. Well, we spent May the 24th. That was the Queen's birthday, you see. Mm-hmm. And we had some sports going on and had a baseball game, mm-hmm. and that. And we had, there was one of those famous scouts of the American planes, Jack Crawford. Only he was Captain Jack Crawford. And he got a tent along, you know, and was going in. But he was the referee or umpire, was umpire of that game. And he didn't know nothing about baseball, but he got two guns on him, you know. And his buckskin clothes and all that. But someone told him that he'd made an error, that that fellow, he hadn't made that base. Hey, bring that man back. And there was a gun in his hand. He says, bring that man back, after he'd already told him he was safe. But, so it was fun. And there was an Australian outfit there, some boys from Australia, and one of them had got a, well, he was practically naked, but he'd got a flour sack and pants made out of them, and he'd got stenciled right across the back of it, rats. And so there's fun, you know. Uh-huh. And but you'd be surprised the people there was there. And so we put in, you couldn't go because the lake was froze yet, but we built our boat there, and we hadn't split up, but the fellow that used to be the janitor for in the factory or what it was, that Singer sewing machine, why, he decided he wasn't going to wait. We was building, Vin and I was, what was the other guy's name? He was the Hungarian, but he was the cook. He was, he cooked the grub and made the bread and ground the coffee beans, and so kept him busy. But the other Frank, he decided that he was going to go down by himself, down the river, you know. And he got a boat. He bought a boat, a small rowboat practically. It was probably 12 foot long, perhaps. And they put his shared his stuff. You see, he had got a third. Well, he had a third of their outfits. You see, they because they went together. They bought the stuff, and each one put in so much. And but I, mine was outside of theirs. And they and he just to say, here's the little stream was running, you know, and he wanted to get away, and the boat was loaded up with his stuff. And it didn't go the length of the boat. It landed on another rock, a little rock, you know. By golly, he said, that's as far as I'm going. So he stuck a shovel up. You had a shovel, you know. Uh-huh. He stuck a shovel up with the shovel up in the air, mm-hmm. the handle in the ground. Mm-hmm. That meant there was a sail on, you see. Every fella come around there, and we brought him out. Uh-huh. Bought all his stuff that he didn't want. And he took it, hoofed it back to Skagway and went back home to New York. Mm-hmm. That's as far as he went. But but Vin and I, we built a boat, I think 30 foot long and 4 foot, 5 foot beam. Mm-hmm. And that was quite a barge, mm-hmm. you know. See, it's... but when we'd got it all built, you could shake it, and you shake the whole thing, you know, pieces. Mm-hmm. So we went out in the woods there and got a bunch of natural knees. See, where roots, mm-hmm. where roots come in. Well, we cut out a lot of those, and worked them out, evened up, you know, so we could put them, and made that boat as stiff as a, as it was stiff as you could make it, that's all, because them knees, them natural knees, they don't give, you know.
Where did you put those in that?
Right where the bottom, of, you know, the cross pieces, and the, hewed them things out, you know, out of the roots, see. They was natural curved. There was, you couldn't bend them or couldn't get no gift to them, but all you do, you've got to whittle them down so that they would fit. Mm-hmm. And then we run out of pitch. We took some pitch. Well, they did. I didn't have nothing to do with that. But we'd got some pitch and tow, oakum, and to caulk with, you see. and you fill the seams up with this oakum,
mm-hmm.
and then you pour pitch on it, hot pitch, mm-hmm. see? Well, that make it perfectly tight and waterproof joint.
Mm-hmm.
And we got our boat and got it all loaded nicely. There was only the three of us. And there was two boys come along, and they wanted to go. And wanted to take passage with us, you see. So we sized up their outfit to get, they got their food, same as we had. And their stuff, but they wasn't together. That is, they didn't come from the same place, but they were looking for, you know. So we took them on, but we made a mistake. In this way, our stuff was in the boat. Of course, we'd got all our heavy stuff in the middle, mm-hmm. and we'd got some light stuff in the stern,
mm-hmm.
and we built a boat, oh, about 10 foot long for a dinghy,
mm-hmm.
So we could didn't have to land with our big boat with every time we wanted to. We'd
mm-hmm.
we could see a place we wanted to stop, where we'd could get in the little boat and go ashore. And but after we got ready, you know, we'd already loaded the boat, as I say, and we'd got our clothing sacks was right in the aft end of the boat, and all our heavy stuff was in the midships, and we didn't want to mix their stuff with ours. They had several sacks of flour and beans and bacon and come in, and well, then we put too much of their weight, of their heavy stuff, in the barrel of our boat, which consequently made it unmanageable. And it wasn't anything but pure luck. It wasn't because we showed any sense that we ever got away from what was the name of the place? Stewart? Lake Bennett. Yeah, it wasn't because that we had anything to do with it, because we were lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Because we never got out for from the shore no more than 100 yards, I would say, and everything was unmanageable.
Mm-hmm.
The little boat, we thought it was that, was too far astern, because she'd go first this way and then she'd go that way,
mm-hmm.
and we thought it was her that was causing us the trouble. See, Vin and I, we were sitting right in the stern with the steering oar,
mm-hmm.
and the other two strangers, they were sitting amidships,
mm-hmm.
and Pop, as we called him, that's what we called him, Pop.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought of it now. Pop, he was right between us, you see,
mm-hmm.
and he was supposed to work a little hand pump we made. Vin made the pump, mm-hmm. and he was to pump the, if the water leaked into the boat, why, he was to pump that, and then that was his door. And Vin and I was handling the steering oar,
uh-huh.
and it was ash oar that we bought before we started from,
mm-hmm.
anyway, we bought it. And is that working?
Yes, it is.
And we got the first thing you know, we was ashore.
Mm-hmm.
And the boat was, unmanageable. And so we got us some stuff ashore out of the boat as quick as we could and up above the water level. And then had to turn the boat up. Where she landed on a rock, why, it punched a hole in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that meant that we got to unload her, everything, and turn her bottom side up and let her dry out and get a piece of a piece of timber out of the woods, which there was plenty of, and patch that on. Well, we didn't have pitch enough to make a good seal, So we also had to scramble around there till we found a spruce gum, a stump with a lot of gum on it, see? Mm-hmm. And mounted that down and run that in and put her back. But this time, it wasn't because we had sense enough to do it, it was because we did it. Mm-hmm. We put the heavy stuff aft of midships. And all the light stuff, which was bulky and all that, but that was all went in front while we sailed away from there just like nothing at all. Mm-hmm. And of course the stream would take you down because the current is continuously going. And, mm-hmm. and so we put up a sail, we got a mast that we'd made, and mm-hmm. we stepped that and put up a sail. It was and the sail was we'd got a 14-foot tent, mm-hmm. or 10 by 14 the tent was, and they got a horn in to go over it, so you can see what the size of it was, but our master carried it all right till we got, we'd been going down the river quite comfortable, mm-hmm. and when we got to the end of Lake Bennett, which was I don't know how long, but it took us all the day that we started after, not the second start, you see, mm-hmm. from the top of Bennett. We got down to the, and we got fine down the river till we come to, and all the crossings till we come to Whitehorse. White Horse Rapids, mm-hmm. and from there, that was different.
See,
we came down a nice river there, flowed down a nice river there, and hit a good clip, and we saw a lot of boats on the shore, so long bank, tied the bank, and so we tied up, and then there was a, through that White Horse Rapids, it's the river comes down, it makes a sudden turn, and all goes in between those rocks. Well, between two rocks, but we walked all around the top of it to see what it would do, and we decided that we weren't man enough to take that boat through, if we had any sense. And there was two fellas there, one was an ex-mounted policeman, and mounted policeman, and Canadian, and the other one was it might have been a sailor sometime, or anything, you see, mm-hmm. but anyway, they'd pilot you through mm-hmm. for $20. Well, like some of them, was like myself, was flat broke, and I wasn't quite flat broke. I did have a packet of tobacco, I think. But we decided that we'd hire that ex-policeman to take us through. And he said he would take us through for $20, or if he'd take us through if we'd give him that whore. Ash ore that we'd got. Well, we thought if it was worth that much to him, why it was worth that much to us. So we decided to pay him the $20, and that just about broke it. Well,
we already flat broke.
Yes, and that did. But the other two boys that were passengers, they wanted to pay their share. They didn't want us to try it ourselves. And Vin, this kid who was with, he was one hell of a man with a gun, a shotgun, mm-hmm. and he got to have his shotgun right on the seat alongside of him, mm-hmm. and this policeman says, now he says, when I tell you to pull, he says, you probably don't know a starboard or port, he says, I'll call you number one and number two. Now he says, when I tell you, call out your number, he says, and want you to pull, I want you to pull, he says, and no fooling, mm-hmm. And you other there, if I don't name you at all, I says you keep quiet, mm-hmm. don't do nothing, just sit there till You'll get your turn later on, Press. Well, we'd go through the stream, of course, is narrowing up and getting faster and faster, and it makes that turn to go through the White Pass. No, not the White Pass. What is that name of that? Well, I guess it is White Pass. Well, she goes like into a canyon, but if she comes up right in the middle of her, you're way up here in the water, but you can see the rock down there, and you can see the rock down there. You're on the surf of it, you see. Mm-hmm. And going through, there's a circle place, and if there wasn't a little bunch of ducks in there, mm-hmm. and he wanted to quit his rowing, you know, and get one of them ducks, Vin did, mm-hmm. He said, "You let that gun alone, that priest. You let that gun alone." He says, "You've got enough to attend to." So he realized then that he was foolish, you know, just to... But we got through, and we never had no trouble. We got down about a mile below that, to Score Rapids, but then that was easy to navigate, you see. But just as we got and pulled ashore, there was something come up out of the bottom of the ocean, above the river, and... It turned over and it looked for all the world like something got no business there. And then it turned over and you could see it was a sack. And it was swelled up so tight, you know, and it was just like a, well, like a balloon. Mm-hmm. And so one officer who got as close to it on the side it was, he pricked it with a knife. Mm-hmm. And it was originally it was a sack of dried apricots, oh. But they just puffed up and swelled, and did they go through that little hole that knife made and squirt all over our boat and everything. But the boys that was going with us, you see, and Pop, they walked, mm-hmm. and they was there to take our line when we threw the line ashore and hold us there till we got ashore, and the policeman, he walked back. Mm-hmm. But he didn't take our horn, so we kept it. But we didn't have no use for it much after that. Oh, we had use for it, of course, but it was a good... You know what I mean. You think, well, if it was that worth that much to him, it's worth that much to us. Mm-hmm. And so we kept it. But then it was the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. And Pop, he'd got a 44 Colt revolver, and he had got no shotgun. But he got up the 4th of July, and he was firing away. And we asked him what he was firing. Oh, he says, "The 4th of July." He says, "I'm American. Going to celebrate." But in going down the river, you know, there was a barge load of sheep was ahead of us. Mm-hmm. And they had trouble, and there was two decks. And they got the sheep on the bottom deck and sheep on the upper deck, you see, but they had trouble too. And they washed a part of them off. Mm-hmm. And we saw one alongside of the river edge, you know, and he was trying to get out. It couldn't, it got, well, it wasn't a long fleece, it had got a bull though, mm-hmm. but it simply couldn't get up that little bit of a bank with that bull soaked, you see. And so we saw it and we tied up, run our nose of the boat in, and one of us jump ashore and take a rope and tie our boat. Because, you see, the boat will turn around and always the stream will take it down the stream. And I butchered the sheep because, of course, I was a sheep man. I'd been down butchered sheep. We had mutton for Fourth of July feast. So we enjoyed it. And then, as I say, this boy was a great man with a gun. And we got to a place and was parked, camped. And he saw a squirrel. Now, I believe that was the only squirrel I ever saw up there. I'm not sure. I might have seen another one. But it was the first one. It was a red squirrel. And he went around the tree and got on the side that the squirrel was, because the squirrel would look around the tree where the rest of us was and then bob back. Mm-hmm. But he got on the other side and took Mr. Squirrel's head off and with a shot. And that was the sweetest meat.
Well, you cooked it?
Oh, you bet you cooked it.
Well, you had a mutton, didn't
Oh, that was before 4th of July, that was. But this was several days later because, you know, you wasn't going that several hundred miles down there in one day. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of the day, Pop, he used to do the cooking for us and the pumping. And he decided that we wouldn't stop for night. Mm-hmm. We'd let the because you couldn't go only one way on the boats. You know, as long as somebody was steering it, it was going to go down the stream. And yes, we won't waste no more time. We'll keep going instead of looking for a place to shore to camp. You see, but just as sure as we'd made up our minds, all agreed that it was best if we was to get down there, because you see, it was getting in the summer. Mm-hmm. It was to keep going. But long as we got about sundown, Pop was looking for a place where we could land. Mm-hmm. And they'd say, Vin, there's a good place for us to pull in. Didn't matter what we'd agreed on before that. So we had to stop for Pop to... We never run all night.
Well, probably just as well, if that's where you're going.
No, you didn't know what we was going to do. And you'd got all... The whole fellow we was acquainted with afterwards, he said, I've got all eternity to do what he was going to do.
Well, and I imagine you're tired now. Are you tired now?
Well, if you want to shut this off, I think we... But we finally got there. We got down to Stewart. Mm-hmm. Where the Stewart came in, mm-hmm. about Pastor White, and these two boys, they had a chance to go to, there was a outfit going logging, mm-hmm. and they had a chance to, so they wanted to take that up, you see, they went to work with this logging outfit. Well, we stopped there for a little while, but we didn't want to stop there. Not yet, because we wanted to go to Dawson anyway, mm-hmm. and so we went right down after they left us at the mouth of Stewart, and on the road down we picked up an old fellow from, well, we got acquainted with him at Stewart. He was an old sea captain, and he wanted to go down to Dawson, but he was a mason. And he had his flag up with the Masonic sign on it, you know, and he thought that someone was going to call for him, but he decided he'd go down with us. Well, we was going down, and there's a lot of little islands there. I couldn't tell you just where we was, you know, how far down, but there was currant bushes right on the bank, you know, and they was loaded with black currants. So we searched for a place where we could tie up, and we tied up there, and we went ashore, and there was acres of the nicest black currants you ever saw. Mm-hmm. And I knew enough about birch and birch bark to do something, you know, so we could pick a lot of them berries and... Well, in an hour or two, we'd have more berries there than we could put in the boat. Mm-hmm. So whilst they was doing that, I was cutting, you strip a piece of birch bark and you can peel it. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd cut some pieces so long and then split them and double them up and put 2 inches together and bring the bottom up over it, you know, and you've got a wooden peg and shove through there and you've got it all snug and secure. And I figured they'd owed 3 to 4 pound of currants, you see. Mm-hmm. Well, we was about, wasn't too far from Dawson. So after we got all the currants, we could put them in them, make them baskets as we went along, you see, and put them in. And so our first appearance in Dawson, but when we got down there was more boats like ours tied up there that you had to step over about 4 or 5 boats before you could get ashore. Mm-hmm. So, you tied up to this boat, you see, and then you stepped over the other boat and into another one, over another one, and over another one, or got across. things was lined well, as everybody was headed for Dawson, you see. And we sold the currants, mostly of them, to those pie shops and at, but we had no trouble. I don't know what we charged for them, but I think it was well, it was run into dollars, you see. And then I sold the last of them to the well, it was a bakery, making a little bakery there, and he took all we'd got left, and that's where I got the first down flare. There was chalk, see, and I'd always been used to this middle of the woods flare, and that's all we'd got, and all we'd ever had, see, and we'd still got some, but we was running low, and got a sack of flour in the trade for these blueberries, or for these black currants and something. And we got, oh, we got a meal, I think, and whatever it was, we made a deal, and but there was only the three of us. Well, before we got through, we'd taken a contract to deliver logs to Dawson for the police department. They wanted dry logs, you see, and yeah, we thought we could do that, and but shucks, we hadn't got the sense enough to, but we we got the contract to bring down all we could of, because we'd seen them as we went along, you know, where the fire had gone through. There was dead logs there all up the side of the mountain, and and on the top of it. Well, we went, we bought a lot of rope, and went back up there. Now, how in the heck did we get back up there? I don't know how we got back, I forget. But we got back up there, all right, and well, that's yes. We built another boat at Stewart before we went any farther. It was only the three of us, you see, and the cook and his pop was cook, and Finn and I. But we whipsawed some lumber and built a longboat, 22 foot it was, and there was only a 4 foot beam, you see. But it was, we built it for going up the river, see, not a broad beam like our big boat was. And we had that to, going back, you see, up the river. You could go, you could lots of places you could walk along for a while, you see, and then you might come to a place where you had to get in the boat and then row like the policeman to get up to the next slow water, you see. And but we got back there and started to get some logs out, and well, we'd got quite a bunch of logs. There's just the two or three of us. Poppy, you couldn't figure on him much for axe or shovel or anything, but he was willing. And but the most of the work fell on Vin and I, because well, we didn't know any better. And we'd got a pile of logs, and then one jammed Vin's foot, you know, caught him in sliding down the hill, and it caught him up against another log or stump or something. So it put his foot out of business for a little while. Well, he said, "I ain't not going to monkey around this no more." He says, "I'm through." And about that time, there was a outfit come. I think it was five men, and they gave us I don't know, $200 or something like that for our contract and the logs we'd got, you see. Well, ours wasn't a total loss, because all we'd done was, all we'd spent was time, because we'd, and what few, so they took over our contract, and we had no, they got gold dust, but they had no means of weighing it, you see. And it was $16 to the ounce. That's what you used to get for it. Now it's 35 an ounce of gold. But then it was 16 for commercial. Mm-hmm. But the real stuff was about 24, something like that. But now it's going up to 35. And one of the fellows says, I tell you, he says, I've seen it done, he says, but I don't know whether it's how near it comes to what you want. But he says, you take a 44 shell and fill it. He says, you've got an ounce of dust. And empty, you know, after it's been fired. So we, that's what they, how we settled it. Mm-hmm. Took that 44 shell, you see, and because that's what they're, the only guns we had. I never had a gun, as I remember. No, I didn't have no gun. But we had the 44. Pop used to think that he was armed, mm-hmm. and Ben had a 44, but he used a shotgun. It was his. But so you see, the shell of that would just hold an ounce of gold dust. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way we settled it. So they took our contract off our hands and bought the ropes that we, because you have to have something, you know, to line them down there and then get a fellow ashore to take your rope and also land your raft. Mm-hmm. So we got out of that pretty good. So that was our my first experience in Dawson. Mm-hmm. But I was down.
Well, here we are in Walla Walla. We got here Sunday evening about 5:30, and Jack Hogben came about 11:30 this morning, Monday, and about 7:30 or so, Mary Crone came. So we've had a gab fest. And, huh?
Let's try that now.
We'll stop it then before it's done.
Goes from the
way.
You're talking right now.
You know,
you're
gone.
You're wasting it if you don't.
Well,
sure.
Shucks, I don't know where to start.
Well, start how you started on your trip and how you started to get up there.
Well,
where'd you get the idea?
No, this is an in-between.
Well, we're recording all this, so...
I couldn't even tell you the date.
Well, that's all right.
It's in 1900, I should say. 1900.
Well, we didn't get started. The gold rush started in 1898.
Yeah.
And when did you go up there?
98.
98.
The spring of 98 it started. And got there... But this was an experience that came to me later, after I'd been there some time. I fell in with a bunch of boys that was packing, running a freight train, a freight outfit from Circle City on the Yukon. And we used to pack this freight out about 100 miles, or maybe more, or 100 miles more or less. And it used to cost the person a cent and a half a pound for the freight. But when we got to the end of the trail, there was a mountain range to go over, and it cost them 15 cents more a pound to put the stuff on top of the hill. Mm-hmm. And there was times when you couldn't put it up there. Mm-hmm. And we had a contract with the boys, some of the miners, to freight their stuff out to them. And some they'd pack it up the hill themselves, take the responsibility. And some they wanted to, us to put it up there.
Well, where did you pack from?
From Circle City out to
Was it Eagle? Or?
No, it was... It's called Kelly Creek now, but at that time I don't know what name of the creek was.
That was in Alaska, wasn't it?
That was up in Alaska, yes. And then we could go up this Kelly Creek with a sled and load stuff till we got up about 6 miles, and then it was 2 miles more or less, two or three miles more or less straight up. Mm-hmm. And the sleds couldn't go no farther. That we had to pack it up on their backs and or the best way we could to get it up there, and then leave it. And we was got up there with the outfit. There was one, two, three. There was four of us. We had that's about 16 animals.
Did you use dogs or horses?
Horses and mules. And we was working it up there, and then a storm came. The wind was blowing there. You couldn't go up that hill you couldn't go. That's all to it. You had sense enough to stay home, or if you didn't, you deserved to. Whatever happened to you. And this storm came, and it lasted a couple of days, and we couldn't keep the old team up there because we hadn't got grub enough along there to keep ourselves. We'd have to break into the customer stuff. So decided that I should stop there, and the rest of them would go back and bring some more stuff. Of course, they got to go back 100 miles more or less. And I stopped up there, and for about 2 days, I couldn't do nothing, only just dig the few animals I'd got. I'd got three, I think, maybe four left, and the rest went back. Mm-hmm. And so I woke up one morning, I thought. It was dark at all times. You couldn't see any very little way. Mm-hmm. And but it was quiet. So I loaded the sledge, what I got left there, and hooked the horses on, and went up the hill. Well, I made two trips up, and our contract was only to take it to the top of the hill. We didn't, and just pack cash it there, and the owners of the stuff would come up from the other side and take it down. Well, if they could get up there, they could easily go down, see, and take big loads too. But going up, I'd put on...
Tea, coffee.
Well, everything was what a person would want for carrying through for a year, mm-hmm. or less, year more or less. And so I got up when everything was quiet, and I hooked up and went up the hill three times. And of course, after I got up the hill, all I had to do was to sit on a sled and start down, and the horses would come down to follow me down. Mm-hmm. And I went and got all the stuff up, and it was still the same as far as light or dark was. It was just about the same. You could see just as well as if you got a full moon. Mm-hmm. And then I went down to the... I thought by the time I got down to the mouth of the creek, there was a roadhouse, and I thought it would be about breakfast time down there. And when I got down there, it wasn't midnight yet.
Oh.
See? So instead of stopping, I went on the next roadhouse, and still nobody around, so I went on to the next one. And I was halfway back to Circle City before it was time to get a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I was still Monday, we say, and or here it was Tuesday or Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So
what time of the year was this?
Well, it was right in midwinter, you see.
Oh,
uh-huh. See, because there was snow for... We could sled the stuff out to... as long as it was possible. Mm-hmm. But when you got to the hill, you couldn't sled that, of course. You had to pack it up or get it up there. You could. Well, I could put three or four sacks of flour or whatever. Some of them didn't exceed 500 pounds, and put four of them on,
mm-hmm.
one in front of the other, because one of them would be down half the time, and the others would, if they could hold their feet while this one was down, could get up and hold up for the next one to go down. So you simply, you worked your way up, that's all. And if I left go the sled or the traces or something because I hadn't got a handhold, I'd lose the team. They'd if the going was good, they'd get away from me. If it wasn't good, why, of course, we were stuck. Mm-hmm. But the thing was that there was no difference between the light at midday and the light at midnight. Mm-hmm. So I was working all through the, it must have been the late afternoon, and I thought it was early morning, mm-hmm. and started to work and stuff because it was quiet. Mm-hmm. The storm had stopped. Mm-hmm. And I put all that darn stuff up there, and I thought it was but I got back to the hotel, and it wasn't midnight yet. Mm-hmm. So you can see what it meant, why the land of the midnight sun. You didn't have no midnight, you didn't have no midday, so it could be any old thing. Mm-hmm. But that's what it was that, for that trip. And stayed till we got all our winter work done there, and then the outfit began to split up, and I bought an interest in it, and so I was in the packing business when spring came, and I was in the packing business. There was no such thing as sledding then. Why, it was all what you little you could take was packing, and the price went up accordingly. Instead of
how'd you pack it? I mean,
horses and mules, mm-hmm. pack it out, and instead of the freight where we was getting a cent and a half and 2 cents a pound for delivering it during the winter, mm-hmm. it went up to a quarter, mm-hmm. 25 cents. Mm-hmm. And if we put it over the hill, the hill that I originally put the stuff up, why, it was 35 cents. Mm-hmm. But we could go up, but there was a lot of difference in the load we'd take. Mm-hmm. See, we could put on 6,000 pound on a pair of bobsleds and anything from 1,000 pound up on a double-ender sled that we could hook one or two horses on, but the big bobs, why, we'd put on four, mm-hmm. to bring it out. So you could see if what the stuff that didn't get out there during the winter, they certainly had to, the miners certainly had to pay for, mm-hmm. to get
packed out
with a pack train. Mm-hmm. But I went into the pack with one of the boys that was in the outfit. Him and I bought the other two out, and still went into packing business when the winter broke up.
Vince? But, was this the one called Vince or not?
No, that's the boy I went into country with. But no, this is Dave Hunt was my partner in this packing outfit. Well, we packed there and all summer.
How many animals did you use? I had
About eight, mm-hmm. then, and six, mm-hmm. six or seven, eight for the most. But I would pack. And there was other outfits that was ready for pack out there too, but it's before long I'd got all the business, mm-hmm. and that was simply because my partner, he was a good cook, and there was a roadhouse out there or a boarding house or whatever you'd like to call it, and he cooked for. The boarding house cooked for two or three mining outfits, mm-hmm. so that they'd come there and get their meals and then go to their own claim and be working there. But come home and come to the place. And my partner, he was they engaged him as cook. Well, that paid us two ways. Mm-hmm. It not only.
I'm pretty and Tommy and that kind of.
I don't think he has to.
It not only paid him a pretty good wage. I think he was getting 150 a month, and his board, of course. And it wasn't nothing these days, but to them days it was pretty good. And also, it also gave me quite a little business. Mm-hmm. Well, one day I went out there with I had six animals, and one of them had a riding saddle on, so that if I could ride back. Mm-hmm. Well, I got so that I could walk better than riding, so I didn't used to ride. Mm-hmm. So if there was anybody wanted to go in with me, well, I'd take him in for $30, mm-hmm. see, leave him the saddle horse. Mm-hmm. And but the only thing, sometimes I didn't have a full load, but there was a boy in Circle City would look after my interests there, and if there was a barge came down, which there was sometimes, that had been coming over the White Pass and down the Yukon, why, there'd be a lot of fresh vegetables. Well, I'd tell him to buy anything he could see that was, you know, what men would want. So cases of eggs and sacks of potatoes and such like that come down. Well, the men that brought it in, they'd get it over the railroad so far, and then come down on a boat, and they'd buy it, and they'd come down from Dawson and sell it along the road. Well, of course, they got a little red out of it, and because the boat was a total loss, what they'd got, because when it got down, it wouldn't pay them to tow it back, have it towed back, it was gone, see? Because they got down to St. Michael's, and then you was in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And it cost you more to bring the darn boat back than it would to build a burn up there and bring some more stuff down. Mm-hmm. So the men would... But it was an interesting experience to see what they meant when they said the land of the midnight sun. Mm-hmm. There was no stop, no nothing. If it was interesting, you went after it. If it wasn't, well, you let it drop. Mm-hmm. So the...
Well, maybe you should. Now, is this the end of this week?
Well, practically, because I was through there, you see, and... Wasn't it?
Should
we play that over?
Yes,
again?
And then see if it's talking loud enough. Of course, you can turn up that volume a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I had a disagreement with the steamship company.
Hold that closer.
Eh?
Yeah, oh. Hold that
closer. Oh, you're taking this down?
Just hold like this and talk to the rest of us.
Yeah, well, I had a little disagreement with the steamship company, and instead of going down through to St. Michael, where I was signed on for it, why, I got myself dumped ashore at Circle City. Mm-hmm. And that's where I made more money when they dumped me off the boat. Well, I turned around and hired on as a to help unload it. I made more money unloading the damn boat than I can. All that work I'd had done for nothing, but I got, I don't know what it was, $2 or $3 an hour. Unloading, putting in the warehouse, you see, happened. And when the boat was gone, why, I went into a saloon, and the saloon was, but at the back end of it, there was a flooring put in up there about 6 foot high, something like that. And a fella wanted to go to sleep, why, they'd put him up there, you see. And if he wanted to leave his, outfit whilst he was anywhere, why, he could leave it there, and they'd put it up, or you'd put it up there, and you'd find it there when you went back. And so I asked him, you know, around whether there was any work going on in the mines. And they said, well, they wouldn't know, but you could find out. But there's a good trail out to them. And there was three different creeks that was working. There was Deadwood and Big Bonanza. Big Bonanza and I guess it was Little Bonanza they called the other one. Big Bonanza and Deadwood mines, creeks that was working, mines that was working, you see. So I went out and put on a pack on my back, but I always used to carry a bottle of Vaseline, one of them little jars of Vaseline, you know, because if you're skinned yourself up somewhere, well, it was always a pretty good thing, and it didn't take up much weight, not trouble. But I walked out, and I come to a rise, and we had to go over it, and on top of it, the most delicious raspberries you ever saw, and they were thick, but you had to fight the mosquitoes to get to them. But after I left there, I got, well, all my fill of raspberries. That's all there was to it.